It's Celtics coverage on CLNSradio.com.
A bomb from Thomas. It's gone. It's been his night.
Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll free 347-215-7771.
Welcome into the Boston Celtics post-game show on CLNS Radio, the leading online provider of audio and video coverage for the Boston Celtics. I'm your host, Josue Pavone. I'm joined by Bobby Manning, and we got a very special guest behind the glass, playoff edition style, so we're bringing out all the special guests out here. Nick Gelso is behind the glass, and we'll make sure he gets in on here in just a little bit, but what a game by the Boston Celtics. That the Celtics look like the type of Celtics team that we saw win so many games this season. 53 games to be exact, and the Celtics blow out the Bulls 104-87, blowout fashion. They take game three and now are only trailing the Bulls by one game in this best of seven series. The Bulls still lead 2-1, but this game certainly gave you some sort of confidence in this offense as they were able to pull together. And we had six players in double figures for the Celtics. Six players. This Celtics team shot close to 50% throughout the entire night. And one thing they certainly did, and it's something that we've seen time and time again this season, they were letting them fly behind the arc. The Celtics drained 17 three-pointers. 17. And here I am, you know, talking about this game, saying to myself, I really hate the way the Celtics have been controlling the pace of this series. In game one and game two, I felt like they just didn't have any control of the pace. Very slow, very sluggish offensively. And I thought the best thing for them was to go and reset and slow things down and find a way to score in the half court without chucking up threes. Well, Brad Stevens went the complete opposite end. He inserts Gerald Green to the starting lineup, which, of course, is an energy guy, a guy who never sees a shot he doesn't like to take. So he was chucking him, you know, right from the start. He got off to a hot start. 5 points in the first opening, five, 6 minutes of playing time. You had a lot of threes being drained by Avery Bradley, which we knew going into it. Avery Bradley, I mean, good shooters, they're going to eventually find their shot. And that was the case tonight. He finished with 15 points. He was 5 of 10, 4 of 6 behind the arc. Al Horford, what a game by Al. He was doing a little bit of everything, stuffing the stat sheet like he usually does, but he finished with 4 steals in this one. Jay Crowder with 16. He continues to shoot well. He also drained in a couple three-point shots. So we're going to talk about, of course, the offense from the Celtics team, what they were able to do tonight. Live or die by the three. How do you guys feel about that? Of course, you have to call us to let us know. And the phone number to do that is 347-215-7771. I see the calls are already in. They're already waiting, so I can't wait to get to them. And we will momentarily, but first things first, I have to get to my co-host, Bobby Manning. Bobby, I know you were talking – I mean, we talked, a couple of days ago about how this is going to be a long series regardless of the Celtics being down by two games here. But how do you feel about the Celtics offense? How do you feel about this, you know, live or die by the three-point attitude that we saw tonight? And how do you what's your take on what you saw tonight by the Celtics against the Chicago Bulls in this crucial game three?
Well, I saw two things. I saw them trust their team. They went deep into that bench again, and there was so much talk about before the playoffs, tightening up the bench, getting these deep bench guys on there for good. Don't see any Tyler Zeller. Don't see any Gerald Green. And I think we all bought into that. I know I did. You know, just go with your 6-7 guys, run that. It's playoff time. You run a short bench. But I think what we found out tonight is that the greatest strength on this team is how many different versatile, unique skill sets they have on this squad. I mean, we all woke up this morning guessing, all right, what are they going to do? Who's going to be that new starter? What's the lineup change going to be? No one in their right mind thought it was going to be Gerald Green. But in the end, Gerald Green hit some big shots tonight. But more importantly, you wouldn't have thought he'd be a player in solving the rebounding battle. But he goes out there, and as an athletic wing, and Matt Moore pointed this out, I'm going to give him credit for this. He really helped them rush the boards. Three guys were on top of the boards almost every single possession. The Bulls still won it, of course, but it was a more reasonable margin. There weren't as many deflating tip-ins, easy rebounds that should have been had that turn into extra possessions and easy points for the Bulls. They really cleaned up that end of the ball. And another point I want to make right off the bat here, 34 assists on 41 buckets. That's just Celtics basketball. They really trusted the system tonight. They trusted every player to make plays for the team. And that's where you get those big performances from Terry Rozier, Gerald Green. Even Jonas Jerebko had some awesome run off the bench. And where they really won this game was that lineup of Terry Rozier, Marcus Smart, Avery Bradley, Jonas Jerebko, and Kelly Olynyk. You're shivering watching those guys out there just because of how bad the bench is, but the ball moves seamlessly between those five. It looked like they were just running offense as easily as Isaiah Thomas and the rest of them were, and they trusted them to go an extra minute or two, and that ultimately those 5 minutes they gave them to start the fourth quarter won this game. The Bulls had no fight in them in that fourth quarter. Once Jonas Jerebko was scoring off pick and rolls on them to begin the fourth quarter, they pretty much gave in, threw in the towel, and getting the series back to Boston for a game five is so vital. And I don't want to say they changed the whole series around tonight, but they found their formula for success. And here's this for data. 3 playoff wins by Brad Stevens now. Start clapping your hands, because that's all we heard all week was the Brad Stevens. Oh, can he survive in the playoffs? I thought you saw Brad Stevens coach circles around Fred Hoiberg tonight.
Yeah, drop the mic like Tisdale, man. That's your data right there. There you go. Or data. So that's the way he said it, right? Right, Bobby? That's right. You know what? The way the Celtics were moving the ball was very impressive. And like you said, that is classic Celtics basketball. What we saw last season, sometimes it was a bit inconsistent throughout the regular season, but that was not the case tonight. I mean, I was certainly surprised by the move to see Gerald Green in the starting lineup. But then when I thought about it, I thought about his athleticism. His shots, you know, he can score in bunches. We've seen him do that throughout the regular season. And then I thought about how the rebounding, you know, aspect of the series has certainly been a big flaw throughout the series for the Celtics. I mean, they still got out-rebounded tonight. But the intensity, you know you're going to get intensity out of Gerald Green. But what also surprised me a lot about what Stevens did was the rotations that he used. I mean, you didn't see Jaylen Brown. You didn't see well, you saw a bit of Kelly Olynyk, but he wasn't the first one off the bench like you typically see. You saw Rozier and Marcus Smart, the first ones off the bench. And those are energy guys. Those are guys who are going to give you energy, going to move the ball, who are going to, you know, fight for every single possession on both ends of the floor. And that's exactly what they did. So I love the fact that Brad Stevens sort of knew what was most important. It wasn't just about trying to slow down the Bulls offensively, because the Bulls have been – they've been a heck of a team on offense, which really it's really surprising, because coming into the series, that just hasn't been their forte this entire regular season. They're one of the top or bottom 5 teams in offensive efficiency, and the way they're shooting the ball in game one and game two, and of course Rajon Rondo, who was inactive, he's out indefinitely with a broken thumb. That certainly plays a role. You know, you saw Spurs throughout the game where the Bulls sort of looked lost offensively, and it didn't help that Jimmy Butler had a very poor shooting night. He finished with 14 points, but he was also 7 of 21 from the floor, so that's not something you typically see from Butler. And I was surprised to see that, because I always thought, even throughout his struggles in the first half, that he was going to turn it around, much like he did in game one, where he, you know, flipped the switch at the end of the third quarter. But at the end of the third quarter, the Celtics finished strong, and that's very, very important. I mean, we've talked about that before, Bobby. We posted a lot of these post-game shows together, and we always talk about how coming out of halftime and having intensity and grabbing a lead in that third quarter going into the fourth is very important for the Celtics. It sort of dictates which way the game's going to go when it comes to Celtics basketball. And for the third quarter in this game, the Celtics outscored the Bulls 32-22, not to mention after a very sluggish second quarter, a second quarter that made you think to yourself, okay, this is really going to come down to the wire. I mean, the Chicago Bulls outscored the Celtics 26-11 in that second quarter. You know, they go into the halftime with, it's a one-possession game. All of a sudden, that 17-point lead that you built up in the first quarter is pretty much gone. You know, you're thinking to yourself, here come the Bulls. Here comes Jimmy Butler. You know, here comes Dwayne Wade, who was really pouring it on throughout this entire game. He finished with 18 points, but it was the complete opposite. The Celtics kept their intensity. They kept scoring off, you know, on offense. They were moving the ball very well. They were finding guys down low. I love the intensity, and I love the focus throughout every single player of the Celtics. You know, it seemed like everyone just sort of instilled confidence in the other, and it flowed. You know, it was just natural. It wasn't forced. My only concern is the three-point shooting. I mean, you can't expect the Celtics team to drain in 17 threes throughout this entire series. It's just not going to happen. It's just not the formula for success, especially when you're down in the series, especially when you have to win another one. Okay, let's face it, the Celtics have to win Sunday. I'm not saying the series is over if they don't win it, but you really put yourself in a tough spot if you lose game four and head into Boston down 3-1. Nick Gelso, I said from the top, he's behind the glass. I'd love to hear your take on that because we've had discussions in the past about shot selection and about something chucking up, you know, deep threes. What's your take on that, and how do you feel about this Celtics offense heading into game four?
It's, like, so amazing when they're hitting the shots because everything is clicking. But when you're relying on perimeter shots like that, it's scary. That's because, you know, this team is not like last year's team, where last year's team, obviously this team is better, but last year's team didn't allow their offensive, if they had offensive, a bad game to dictate how they played defense, and this team does that. Like you saw tonight, they hit every, they were hitting perimeter shots, they were hitting shots like the Warriors, and everything was clicking. They were running on all cylinders. And I love the Gerald Green move, too. Not necessarily – the reason I love it is because it was kind of like – instead of Brad Stevens saying, I'm going to fix the rebounding issues, I'm going to, you know, get bigger, he was saying, please play Tyler Zeller, please play Jonas Jerebko. Instead, he upped the ante. And he put in a perimeter shooting energy guy. Yeah, he's long, but he's not – you know what I'm saying? He kind of upped the ante on it. He was like, no, we're going to do what we do, but do it better.
Yes.
And, you know? And I
they
thought it
dictated
was
the pace
recovery
of the game.
They did, and it was a good recovery game for Stevens because, like, he's taken a terrible beating, and I'm always part of beating up on him too. But this was good coaching tonight. He coached well. And the thing is, I think the Celtics have rode the wave of good perimeter shooting for several games. They go on streaks, you know, where they pop off a couple wins because they'd all be hot from the field. And we might see that now. The other thing is, I don't know if you guys caught Avery Bradley at the end of the game. Bobby, you probably did. And Avery Bradley gave me the chills because did you hear what he said? First of all, you know, Avery's always like soft-spoken, just way, you know, no one, you're there all the time. You know that. Right. He was so intense tonight. In the game, but also in the presser, and then he talked about how KG, Isaiah played a video from KG. Did you guys hear this?
No,
I didn't catch it.
Oh my God, Bobby, you would have loved this. So they're interviewing on ESPN. You guys are probably watching CSN. I don't get it down here when it's on the national. So anyway, they're interviewing Avery Bradley, and Josue, he's more intense and giving an interview than I've ever seen him. You know how he's usually like so soft-spoken?
Mm-hmm.
And he explained that Isaiah pregame took out a video of KG giving them a talk. Basically, you have to channel your energy through this tragedy with Isaiah's sister into winning and rallying around your team, and Celtics teams don't give up. And if you guys want to roll over, go ahead, go home now. Like, I'm getting the chills telling you this. And Bradley, who obviously has experience playing with Garnett, it obviously impacted him. It was pretty awesome. And Jerry,
and you know what?
I'm anxious to hear what
that's
what
awesome
was
to
said.
Hear. That's awesome to be here because if you read Kevin O'Connor's piece and I sent it to you the other day,
yeah,
more
I read it. Oh,
more,
boy.
More concerning than their play on the court was what you were hearing about what was going on. Yeah, you were hearing about the yelling on the bench and just like the disconnect on the team and Terry Rozier moving away from Jay Crowder's
locker. Some real juvenile crap going on. And I don't know. Kevin's just – he knows everything. He's really good. That was really concerning. But the one thing about this team too is – and I'm not going to keep you too long. Calvin is waiting, and I know you guys are waiting to get into an argument with him. And the call lines are packed, too. But the other thing is that, the team, they're kind of emotional, aren't they? Like, they get on big highs, and they go on very low lows. And I think maybe they turned the corner from this the horrible weekend that they had. Mm-hmm. And now they're kind of focused on basketball, and they perform well in adversity. So, and you know, when they're in difficult situations, I think, don't you, Josue? It seems like they always – you put them on a big stage with the Cavaliers, and they're expected to compete, and they throw up a stinker on national television. They were expected to really win in a sweep in this series, or five games maybe. Here they let their guard down because they had to prove themselves, and now they have to fight for something with a chip on their shoulder again. And that's the way this team plays best. That's the way Isaiah Thomas plays best. So let's see what happens. I don't think the series is over. And I was the guy saying the whole time, I hate the Bulls. I hate the Bulls. I hate the Bulls. But I don't think the series is over.
And let's not forget that Rondo effect either. I mean, tonight the passing lanes were open. You didn't have that guy swarming Isaiah up at the top of the ball. And I saw a staggering stat going into this game. The amount of turnovers Thomas has going against Rondo compared to anyone else is just day and night. And you saw it again tonight. He
Rondo
was just in total control. Yeah, he was in
Rondo
total control at the point tonight. And
as guys who are very familiar with Rajon Rondo, I knew going in this series, he's the right guy to make guys like Wade, who was at the end of his career, you know, much better. We've seen him do it with Pierce and Garnett a million times. So I just thought from the beginning, look, if Butler's going to get his, Rondo's going to make it easier for him because he's going to create shots for guys like Zipster and these idiots, and I don't want to say idiots, but these guys who, you know, are role players.
Right.
And, good role players, but role players, Rondo makes them better. So now you take him out of the equation, their offense looked like back to being JV tonight. It was
horrible. And at the beginning of the game, it was brutal. They started Jerian Grant, and he was just rolling some of the flattest passes you'll ever see into the post.
Horrible.
They were turning it over like crazy. And to their credit, they got a little smart midway through the game and decided, you know, we still have a playmaker on this team in Dwayne Wade. He's no Rondo when it comes to setting up his teammates, but he did a lot better than those point guards did.
Well, everybody makes fun of Hoiberg, but he's a good coach. I mean, I'm telling you.
I was really surprised he didn't start Michael Carter-Williams. I mean, Michael Carter-Williams he's played some great games for this team, especially when Rondo was benched and he really stepped up in those stretch of games.
Yeah, but I mean, when the Celtics played the Chicago and they beat them by 20, it was like the score was like 109-80 or something. Like, they just destroyed them. Wasn't Rondo out of that game too?
Yes.
I'm pretty sure he was. And I think Carter-Williams was in that lineup too, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was actually. Okay, that's a bad example. But there were other games where he really stepped up big. I mean, he's no Rondo. He's not going to stack up, you know, 14 assists, but he's sort of a more of a score first type of point guard. And I thought that, you know, coming into this game, that's got to be a confidence killer for him.
Yeah.
You know, how do you feel when Rondo goes down and you're not the guy the coach calls on to start? Instead, you go with Grant. I was really surprised.
That team has been jerked around so much between the ups and downs this year. I mean, and who knows? Like, they could have been a bad matchup for. I don't really know. But on that note, guys, you're losing me. My ADD is kicking in, so I'll let you throw it to Calvin. I'll talk to you later, guys. Great.
Yeah,
listen,
we got
the series isn't over.
Okay. All right. Let's see what happens. You know what? Let's get right to the phone calls, and from there we will just snowball. We'll let the calls dictate the show because we do have a bunch of them. Let's get to should we get to Calvin first? We might as well get to Calvin first, right? I want to open up the phone lines, the Movement Watches call lines at 347-215-7771. Again, the number to reach us at is 347-215-7771. The phone lines are, of course, brought to you by Movement Watches. While department stores start at just $400 to $500, the good folks over at Movement Watches have taken the middleman out and are passing those savings directly to you. Movement Watches are slick, fashionable, and most importantly, they're affordable. Starting at just $95. Go to mbmtwatches.com/Celtics for 15% off of your first purchase with free shipping. That's mbmtwatches.com/Celtics. Calvin, what's going on? I'd love to hear your take because I haven't talked to you throughout this entire series. So I can imagine all the kind of bashing that was going on, Celtics bashing, coming from you after game one and game two. So Calvin, I give you the floor.
Only have to bash the Celtics after game one. That's why Nick's getting me on so quick right now. Anyway.
All right, go on.
I'm surprised about your Michael Carter-Williams comment about him being a scoring point guard because I feel like he's known as a terrible scorer. He's shooting like 36% this year. He's a good defensive player because he's got those long arms, but I would not under any circumstances think of him as
Call him a scoring point guard, but okay, all right. I shouldn't have called him a scoring point guard, but he's sort of a guy that I think could sort of dictate the offense better than Grant, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe
That's
I haven't
fair.
Seen enough Grant. Maybe
the
I haven't
thing
seen
is, though, they both stink. They both awful.
Yeah,
and I'm a Syracuse fan. Carter Williams is awful. good defense, but he's going to give you nothing offensively.
Yeah, I think Carter Williams just has sort of the name based on that rookie of the year contract, but I wouldn't even say that he's better offensively than Grant at this point in his career. Certainly overall, if you want to factor in defense and rebounding, you could say maybe he's better, but I think the Bulls need scoring in that starting lineup. So
here's the thing, like, they might as well just scrap that point guard position and roll with Wade as the creator. I think that's a big reason they're going to be able to continue to compete in this series, because Wade can make plays. When they were storming back into the game, that was all Dwayne Wade tonight.
Yeah, I disagree. What did they have, 11 assists for the entire game? Dwayne Wade took 18 shots. He had 3 assists. Dwayne Wade is a creator, but he mostly creates mid-range pull-up jump shots for himself. I think unless they turn Jimmy Butler into the point guard somehow, that's really the only way that they're going to get back into the series in terms of, I think that the Bulls are in trouble now. And it's funny to think of Rondo as being the sort of the fulcrum on which this entire series swings. But I really think that team doesn't have enough ball handling. So I did a podcast the other day with Matt Rury, just to sort of catch up on what's happened so far with the Celtics. And I went in pretty hard on Brad Stevens, and it's not because of the 2-10 playoff record. I don't care about that per se. I think he is a good coach. But like some of the decisions he's been making in this series through the first two games, they didn't make any sense to me at all. I think the rebounding is a sort of overblown thing that he seemed to be sort of tailoring his lineups to try to counteract the rebounding. But if you look at the Bulls past Robin Lopez, they've essentially rebounded even with the Celtics. Or Celtics even a little better. They out-rebounded the Bulls in the second half of both of those games. And the thing is, the thing about Robin Lopez is they would always sort of try to play to him, like play Amir Johnson with him on the floor or try to play Tyler Zeller with him. And I would always argue that, like, what the Celtics had to do, or what I argued, what they had to do was spread the floor out and hit threes on him, punish the team for putting a slow big center in the game, like everybody does to big centers now. And I think that's what we saw in this game, right? I mean, yeah, Robin Lopez still had his offensive rebound, but the Celtics had such a perimeter advantage. I was wondering why Horford wasn't taking more threes. I complained about him. He was super active in this game, moving around. I think that's, what you have to do against a guy like Lopez, against bigger guys. And again, the Bulls aren't even that big outside of Lopez. So they shouldn't even worry about being out-rebounded in this game or in this series, because I don't think it matters that.
Well,
I think it mattered in terms of momentum killer, right? I mean, the Bulls got a lot of second-chance points in Game 2, and I feel like on defense, when the Celtics give up a lot of rebounds and they're not controlling the pace, the offensive pace, a lot of it has to do with those second-chance points, and a lot of it has to do with them killing that momentum. But I hear you. I mean, you look at the rebounding in this one. I mean, Celtics only grabbed 34. The Bulls grabbed 52, and you look at the score, and, you know, of course, the Celtics won, but it was a lopsided win. But at the same time, in the first two games, when the offense was running the way it was with Rondo and them shooting well over 50% throughout the night, I mean, that's what kind of kills your momentum is those rebounds. When their offense is shooting that well. Tonight, 39%. I mean, you're just not going to win a game like that against the Celtics, and that was the case. Celtics shot nearly 50%, and the Bulls shot 39.3%.
I mean, the rebounding stat is something that's always driven me nuts. And the Bulls also missed a lot more shots than the Celtics. So, like, I've always thought rebounding should be a percentage stat and not a pure counting stat, because it doesn't make
sense. Very advanced stat of you, Calvin.
Let me ask you this, Calvin.
Well,
can this Celtics team...
It's a common sense situation, yeah.
Can the Celtics team win another playoff game without having to drop 17 threes?
I think they can. Because
that's my concern.
Here's the thing. I don't think it's the amount of threes that they hit. I think it's the floor spacing that makes the difference. Yeah, they hit a lot of threes, but you saw that floor spacing sort of it's going to create lanes. If the Bulls have to close out on those, it's going to be harder to keep Robin Lopez in the game. That's the point that I'm making. It's going to be harder to keep those guys in the game. And, yeah, the Celtics don't have to hit 17 threes. If they hit 12 threes, but they take – I think it's how many they take as much as anything. As long as a reasonable percentage is going in and they're not being taken by guys who the Bulls aren't going to guard. Obviously, if Marcus Smart takes 6 threes, that's a problem, right? But if Jay Crowder takes 5 threes, if Al Horford takes 3s, it's going to spread the floor, and it is going to be harder for them to rebound at that point. And, by the way, it's also easier to get back on defense when you're already out at the three-point line. But I also think it's helped in that game. Just one, the pace matters, right? Obviously, not turning the ball over, which I also criticize Stevens for sort of them getting into predictable offensive schemes where, like, they would set up with Isaiah sort of in the same spot every time and the Bulls kept jumping that passing lane. I think you saw a lot more variety. I was asking where was the Bradley Pearl screen, and we saw that make its triumphant return a couple times in this game. I think you need to add more variety to your offense, which I think they did. You need to keep going with that. And I think you need to speed the game up when the Bulls go big.
Well, the looks were there, you know? I mean, in Game 1 and Game 2, the Celtics missed a lot of uncontested jump shots, which is a cause for concern, but at the same time, when you have a shooter like Avery Bradley, who, in my opinion, is a guy who's going to turn around sooner or later, and that was the case. You know, he only attempted 10 shots today, and he got to 15 points. He also was rebounding, of course, because he's one of the best rebounders on this team, and so was Al Horford, you know, so the rebounding was there as well. But I just felt like the Celtics defensively weren't the same team that we saw, you know, throughout the regular season. I mean, the Bulls, to give them credit, I mean, yeah, of course they have Jimmy Butler who can go off. Dwayne Wade, we know what he can do in the playoffs. He did it last year, just a year ago. Regardless of how old he is, we know what he's capable of doing. But without Rajon Rondo, I mean, that offense just looked lost at times, and the Celtics capitalized on that, which is great. I don't mind that. But my only concern is that if this Celtics team aren't making those three-point shots, because look, the Celtics, the Bulls, they've stopped the Celtics at the rim with ease. I mean, we saw Gerald Green get swatted. We saw Isaiah Thomas get swatted.
Today, yep.
A lot of blocks at the rim. I mean, the Bulls are there in the paint, regardless of how well the Celtics are shooting. It's almost like they challenge the Celtics to shoot, because that's sort of how they're going to jumpstart their fast break off of those misses.
Yeah.
But fortunately for the Celtics, they were falling. You know, that was the case tonight.
Yeah,
well,
I just think the cleanness of the looks are what matters. Like, yeah, in games one and two, they still took, you know, jump shots. But I felt like the Bulls were doing a lot better with their trap. And that's something, by the way, that's something else working the other way that I was criticizing Stevens for after the first two games, which is trapping guys who weren't Jimmy Butler, like trapping Zipser. And guys, like, that's another reason why they were getting so many interior looks in games one and two. And they didn't.
Yeah, we saw Robin Lopez get
trapped.
I never thought I'd see that. We saw in the perimeter, he got trapped tonight.
He did, but they weren't running. I feel like they were running those hard traps constantly. They're running them like at Rondo, like just let Rondo shoot the three. But in this game, it seemed like it was mostly Butler who they were trying to get the ball out of his hands. Like, they didn't trap Wade at all. Wade just, they just gave Wade his jump shot, and I think we saw what happened. He created a bunch of mid-range jump shots that he missed. And I think that's what you need to do. Just get the ball out of Jimmy Butler's hands and keep one man on everybody else. Don't try to dislocate anybody from that Jimmy Butler.
What bodes well for the Celtics in this series is they have a variety of good can put out there. Jay Crowder has been phenomenal on Jimmy Butler. You haven't even heard Butler's name for, like, most of the quarters in this series. He blew up in the fourth quarter in that game one, and it looked like he was heading in that direction tonight toward the end of the third quarter. But when Crowder's on him, he hasn't been able to muscle by him. And a lot of people are going to talk about Crowder's offensive effectiveness in this series. Honestly, just his defense alone has been a massive contribution. And I get a little frustrated with Bradley being on Butler in some of those smaller lineups and Smart being with Wade. But overall, they've kept those guards from going off for the most part. And, you know, you hate to give up those tip-ins around the rim and the second-chance points. But if you're holding Wade from going off, if you're holding Butler from going off, you're pretty much pulling out the heart of the Bulls team.
Yeah, Bradley should always be on Wade when he's on the court, as far as I'm concerned. He should not ever be on Butler because it's a bad matchup for him, and he seems to have something with Dwayne Wade going back for years where he's like the perfect size for, I don't know, he just seems to like have the exact state right size and speed combination to match up with Wade, and you saw what he did to him tonight. I would just have him stick to Wade for every minute that Wade's on the floor, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I mean, that's the reason why Crowder's been so valuable, too. I mean, you know, for guys like Jimmy Butler, guys that he can really beat up on and get physical with, I mean, those are the matchups that you like to see, and that's exactly what he did tonight. I mean, Jimmy Butler, he just seemed rattled tonight. And again, I was waiting the entire third quarter. Okay, it's just a matter of time. Butler hit, like, a couple of jump shots, and that was pretty much it. I mean, he finished with 14 points, 7 of 21, and if Jimmy Butler just doesn't have it, I just don't think this Bulls team can pull out a win, especially without Rondo. Not to say that Rondo was a scorer or a guy who's going to drop 20, But without him facilitating that offense, I mean, it's just this Bulls team looked like the team that we've seen throughout the regular season. Colin, I appreciate your phone call. Any quick predictions for Game 4 before we let you go?
I think the Bulls will squeeze out Game 4 if I had to predict, but I
you would want that, huh, Colin?
Seven, yeah, well, I said Celtics in 7 before the series started, and I don't feel too terrible about that right now.
Yeah.
All right, well,
I don't think the Bulls are done either. Joso said that before he got off. Everyone's going to be saying it's all over for them now, but they still have enough talent on that roster, I think, to be able to battle for the rest of the series.
I agree. Calvin, thanks for calling in, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, let's keep it rolling here. We have, Sean's been on hold for quite a while here. Sean in Providence. Joining the show. What's up? What's up, Sean? Welcome to the Celtics Post Game Show on CLNS Radio.
I'm happy with what I saw tonight. I think Rondo, you know, being out, that's key right there. I personally feel like we should win this series easily without Rondo, and if we don't, then this team isn't as tough as I thought. That's just my opinion.
I agree with that. Yeah, I agree with that statement. My only concern is, you know, with or without Rondo, the Celtics should be able to win the series. But, of course, without him, that changes the dynamic for the Chicago Bulls. You know, it's funny. Coming into the series, I didn't know what to expect with the whole Rondo and Wade back together, right? Because heading into the postseason, you sort of, in my opinion, I thought Wade was just going to shut it down. You know, the Bulls sort of saw themselves in a tough spot. They weren't going to make the playoffs. And, of course, they did. Wade's healthy all of a sudden. Rondo is playing well, and it really put Hoiberg in the corner where Hoiberg had to let Rondo be Rondo. So funny to me to hear Hoiberg just praise Rondo after these games, after game one, after game two, calling him a genius, calling him such a smart player, calling him a guy that can be a coach one day. And I'm looking, you know, I'm thinking to myself, this is a guy who it seemed like the Bulls were done with by January. It seemed like they were going to try to deal him before the deadline. I mean, he was benched. He was out of the rotation. He was suspended in December. And all of a sudden, he gets the keys to the ship, and here come the Bulls. And the most funny, the most ironic thing about it is after the whole divided locker room thing with the Instagram post, all these guys are rallying behind him. Jimmy Butler, Dwayne Wade, they want Rondo to have the keys. They want Rondo calling the shots. And it's been paying off big time for them in this series. Now Rondo's out, and now Hoiberg is back at square one or where he was back in – what was it, late January when Rondo wasn't in the rotation anymore, and he's trying to figure out how we're going to get buckets, who's going to facilitate the floor, and how are we going to avoid a 2-2 tie on Sunday.
And I think it shows how important it is to have multiple outlets to handle the ball and make plays on a team. You look at the Celtics between Thomas, Horford, Smart, they have so many guys who can start and initiate the offense and get the ball moving and produce points. It was just like, as much as exciting as it was to watch the Celtics fly and soar after those first two games, it was gut-wrenching watching Chicago try to get their offense going. And at this point, with no point guards, with Wade making minimal plays here or there, Butler really not getting involved in the playmaking department, their only options for offense look like blocking those shots, like you said a little bit earlier, getting out in transition, pushing the ball that way, or getting those tip-ups on rebounding. And if those are the two main areas where you're relying to get your offense from, like if that's like all they can get for offense the rest of the way, I don't know how they're going to win another game. I just say I have faith in Wade making those plays for them if they really depend on him in that department. But if he's not able to do that, they're not going to get enough offense to win any games.
Yeah, I feel like the Bulls are in a position where they need Portis to be, like, scoring at least 12, 13, 14 points for the rest of the way. Because, like you said, yeah, I mean, who off the bench is really going to score for you? I mean, yeah, the Zipser, you know, he finished with 10 tonight. But there has to be more guys. I mean, he's the only one that really was scoring for them off the bench. And he finished 3 of 7. Portis was 1 of 4. I mean, he barely even took a couple, you know, more shots than he did in game one, which was huge for him. For the Bulls, he finished with 19. I mean, between Portis and Meritage, those are the guys up front that you expect a lot of points out of, and it's just that wasn't the case tonight.
Another thing about tonight's game was I really liked the lineup, and you know, if the team's playing better with IT on the bench, you know, you got to go with what's working. And hey, the guy might need to grieve, and the team just needs to pick him up. And you know, win that game for him and do whatever they need to do with the lineup to make sure that happens.
I can't stress enough how important it was that they believed in their system tonight. And that as good as Green was tonight, and he had a lot of big buckets for them, especially in that first quarter, just the symbolism of what it meant, like, screw battling with your bigs, screw trying to win the rebounding battle. We're not going to play your brand of basketball anymore. We're the one seed. We're the best team in the East. Our style has worked all year long. You know, everyone wants them to conform to this playoff style, the half-court offense, slowing the game down, going with that tight bench. They didn't do any of that tonight, and they won by double digits. And just that reaffirmation that their style works, that this isn't a flawed system, that you can win playoff games playing in this style tonight was everything. And if anything, that's all you want your coach to be able to do, is instill that confidence in the team again tonight. And I was scratching my head earlier too. What's Green doing in there? What's he going to provide the starting lineup that, you know, maybe Jonas Jerebko wouldn't have done? But now in hindsight and looking how it played out, it made perfect sense. It was just such a great move. And everyone had a lot of skepticism with Stevens after these two games. Everyone's pulling that record out of their pants and waving in the sky. He proved again tonight he's one of the best coaches in the NBA in dramatic style. He was kind of the MVP tonight when you look at it.
Yeah, I was really surprised by it, man. I thought the offense would look much different after the first two games. I mean, I just felt like they were rushing possessions. And this is something that he admitted. You know, he said that after game two, that he felt like his team was sort of rushing through their offense. They were sort of chucking up shots. Jay Crowder, he said a quote that really stuck to me where he said, when the Celtics were down by 10, they felt like they could score 10 in one possession. And that's exactly the kind of attitude they had. It's like, and he made the baseball reference where it's like, you're down by a lot and you just want to hit out a home run every single time. And it's like, no, you need a couple singles. You need a double. You need, you know, to build your way there, you know, chip away at the lead. And that's something that we see the Celtics do so many times, you know, come up big, whether they're down 16 or whether they're down 20. We've seen this team come back from a lot of deficits, and that's the way they did it, chipping away, taking care of possessions, quality possessions, and getting high percentage shots. But here we are in game three. As soon as the game started, Al Horford shoots a three. Jay Crowder shoots a three. I mean, it's just threes, threes, threes all over the place. No slowing down. You know, that's the tempo. I mean, it's sort of like a stubborn, this is our style. We're going to win this way. We're going to show you that we're going to win this way. It works in the playoffs. You know, we're not just a regular season team. We're a team that's going to run our offense the way we run it, the way we've won 53 games this regular season, and that's how we're going to win throughout the playoffs. So that's very impressive for Brad Stevens to come into this such a crucial game where his name
and
was sort
of
on the line here, the series was on the line here, and he just proved to everyone that this is the brand of basketball you are going to see out of the Boston Celtics.
You ask every Celtics fan what move they would have made to change the lineup, not one of them would have said put Gerald. Oh, maybe a few very smart fans would have seen that, but I know I wouldn't. I don't know if you would you have made that move, Joe Sway? That probably wasn't even in your head before this game.
No, it wasn't. I knew there was going to be a change, and I knew there was no way in hell Amir Johnson was going to start this game, so I knew he was going to switch that up. But, yeah, no, I didn't see that. I mean, if anything, I was thinking Olynyk. I was even thinking Jaylen Brown, you know, and that's someone who he hasn't been happy with throughout this series. But I thought maybe he would put him in there sort of for defensive purposes and to kind of add some athleticism. But, hey, here comes Gerald Green, athleticism, someone that can shoot. You know, we've seen what he can do in stretches when he gets going. And we saw how that reflected on the defensive end. And it paid dividends, you know, for that first quarter, got them going, and it sort of got the ball rolling from there.
Yeah, and Stevens loves his veterans. He really does. We had Evan Turner being the playoff hero this time a year ago. Now it's Gerald Green. It feels like they're always going to have that one guy off the bench who can come in there very old but still has a little bit of burst in him.
That's right. That's right. Sean, we appreciate you calling. Feel free to call again. Again, the phone number to join us is 347-215-7771. Again, it's 347-215-7771. This is the Boston Celtics post-game show, and our opening segment is powered by the SeatGeek ticketing app, the smartest and easiest way to buy and sell sports and concert tickets. Now that we know there will be a Game 5, do not miss this opportunity to get a $20 rebate off your first purchase by downloading the free SeatGeek app to your phone. Go to the Settings tab and click Add a Promo Code and enter the code CLNS. That's CLNS, all one word for a $20 rebate. And so SeatGeek knows who sent you. From one caller who's been waiting for a while to another, we're going to go to Kyle in Virginia. Kyle, welcome to the show.
What's up, guys?
What's up, man?
Hey, good to hear from you again, buddy.
Yeah, good to hear from you, too. I know you guys probably have a full board, so I'll try to be kind of quick. I know one thing that was cool tonight, you know, you heard the TNT guys say this past week that so much rests on Isaiah Thomas's shoulders, you know, which is true. But it was really good to see a game tonight where other guys had his back, other guys stepped up, and it was really refreshing to see us win a game. You know, he had a great game, and he impacted the game in big ways. But it was really good to see the Celtics win a game where they weren't leaning on Isaiah to be 100% of the offense. And, you know, it was we needed that so bad. And so it was really good to see us play a game where it wasn't all on Isaiah's shoulders. And I hope in turn that helped him know that, hey, I don't have to do everything. I've got a team that can pick me up. And, you know, it wouldn't shock me to see an Isaiah Thomas score a 35-point game in game four because of what happened tonight. So that was the first thing that I thought was really good. And then lastly, I don't think this is the series for Amir and Olynyk. Not being critical of anybody, it was a great team win. But I think this small lineup is the right mix in this series. And I would not have guessed that. I mean, I don't know half of what Stevens and Auden, obviously. But I think, you know, in the few minutes that Olynyk played in the second half, he just looked really slow. Amir has looked so slow too in the series. It's just not a good matchup for them, I don't feel like, with their quickness in the post, trying to get rebounds. I mean, I think the Gerald Green, Jay Crowder, a few minutes of Olynyk here and there. I don't know. It's the smaller lineup worked better tonight, and that was a good adjustment. I wouldn't have gone there, but it worked. And so I guess the two drawaways tonight where it was really cool to see us win without Isaiah having to carry us. And
Kyle,
small lineup, that was rebounding. Yeah.
Kyle, I love your first point because I feel like that game one was so winnable for the Celtics if other guys had stepped up. I mean, what an emotional game, of course, for Isaiah Thomas and for the guys to rally behind him. Isaiah goes off in one of the most impressive performances I've ever seen just because of what happened.
Absolutely.
About, 24 hours before finding out about his sister and everything that went down. So, yeah, I'm with you, man. When you have guys like that stepping up, it certainly makes it easier for you. And I'm with you. I think Isaiah Thomas will or should, or I would predict, is going to score over 30 points because tonight he finished with 16, a modest 7 of 18 from the floor. But like you said, guys were just picking up the pace. Al Horford,
yeah.
What a game from Al Horford. I mean, 18 points. Crowder had 16. He's been playing well in this series. Avery Bradley gets out of his shooting slump. So, yeah, that certainly helps. You know, it helps.
Absolutely.
Not only because the Celtics need those guys to step up, but it helps because it makes them feel like, I don't need to drop 30 for us to win a playoff game.
Yeah.
You know,
that's
why it's so important because now the Celtics are kind of comfortable. They're in this space where they're feeling like, okay, you know, obviously everyone steps their game up in the postseason. And we have to do the same. And I haven't seen that from the Celtics. That's my biggest disappointment when it came to the Celtics in those first two games, is that every team in the NBA has set their game up, and the Celtics have remained the same. Now we saw the Celtics step their game up. Isaiah can sort of fall right into his comfort zone and really go off. He's just, to me, he's ready to go off in game four because of how everyone else around him is turned it up a notch.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and what I saw in the middle of the game, and I'm going to hit this real quick, Joe Sway, I'm glad you brought it up. You saw him through the middle portion of this game, and it goes back to his 52-point game against Miami. That's really the moment where he started picking up that mindset that, you know, if no one around me is going, I can get everything myself. I can battle the defense on my own. I'm a good enough scorer to get all the points we need. And there's been a lot of games this season where he has just gone out there, been one of the best scorers in the NBA, and that's all they needed to win. But in the playoffs, it's a little bit different, and we've been hitting on it over and over again. Other guys have to step up. And tonight, midway through the game, you finally saw Isaiah feel out the offense and see that he was comfortable dishing the rock around to everybody else. And there was – I forget what portion of the game it was at. It felt like it was just right in the middle of the game, maybe in the start of that third quarter, where he was looking more to pass and set other guys up than he was to score for himself.
Mm.
And that just seemed to bamboozle the Bulls. They were completely caught off guard by that. They were hedging them hard up top. Butler was all over him, and he was just getting easy passes off in the pick and roll to Horford, and that's really where Horford started getting going too, was when he freed up in the middle of the floor there, and he had a brilliant game, one of his best in Green. I feel like he's had a great series as a whole, Horford. So I'm glad you guys both brought that up, because Isaiah now feels like and looks like he can be a playmaker and not have to focus as much on scoring. I mean, he only had 16 points tonight. If you came into the night saying that Isaiah was just going to have 16 points, you wouldn't have thought they'd win.
There's no way
that Crowder gets
win. Right.
Yeah, Crowder gets 16, too. Horford gets 18. Bradley gets 15, and it's an even attack. Even Rozier had 11. You love to see that balanced attack.
Man, he was awesome. Rozier was – I was so shocked watching him play tonight. He was awesome, and I wouldn't have guessed that either. He was playing with that swag that you haven't seen since his Louisville days. Like, he was out there. I mean, had kind of that playground, like, step back jumper. I mean, it was like, who is this guy?
You know, one thing I learned about Rozier tonight, he's more of a catch and shoot. And I know it sounds weird saying that, but he's like a better catch and shoot scorer than off the dribble. Because one thing that drove me nuts about Rozier in the regular season is that he would make these flashy moves. He would leave his defender in the dust. And then he will drop the layup, and I'm like, "Come on, Rozier, you gotta finish those." And now he's just, you know, he's walking into his shot, catch and shoot, and he's knocking them down just when you need him to off the bench.
Yeah, yeah.
23 minutes for Rozier, and Isaiah Thomas, by the way, just to mention, game high 9 assists. So that's exactly what you were talking about, and especially he got a lot of those assists in the third quarter with the Celtics. But like I said earlier, it's the most important quarter, in my opinion, when it comes to momentum for the Celtics.
They were
dynamite
the
Bulls, 32-22. Right. Especially the second.
Oh, yeah. Well, last thing, and I'll get out of here, so I know you've got to tell other people. My prediction for game four is I think we're going to see Denzel Valentine play some point. This could be crazy. This is just me thinking,
play
like,
some
how
point?
Would Woodberg think?
I
wouldn't be shocked. When he played Michigan State, he kind of played that point forward role. I mean, Grant and Carter Williams were so bad tonight. That, I mean, it's gonna be D Wade and Jimmy Butler, but that's my off the wall prediction, kind of like Gerald Green starting tonight. I didn't predict that, but
all right,
I just
okay, we'll see what happens.
Denzel Valentine's gonna get some more minutes, and I was watching the NBA, and I just had this gut feeling that like Rondo's gonna come back miraculously after like a day or two.
Mm.
But they mentioned tonight that it still looks like it's a couple weeks kind of deal.
Yeah,
that's not like,
I kind of,
but yeah.
I felt nervous about that too, but like I read today, he's having like trouble eating even with his hand, and like that cast just isn't coming off, and he's gonna be reevaluated. That hand is messed up, and he's not gonna be back this series anyway.
I think Rondo's gonna come out with the cast in Game 7, man. I don't know. He's gonna ball up with that thing. Like Rondo, he's itching to come back. Not only because he wants to win this series, of course, but he wants to get that contract for next year. That's my opinion. He's like, I need that big contract because he keeps doing these 1-2 year deals. It's just not gonna fly for Rondo.
Yeah. He's sick of those 1 year deals.
Yeah, well, he's got to get used to it because you know now he's got the injury prone. Stamp on his face now after what happened in this series. Kyle, I appreciate you calling, man. Always feel free to call back again. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Kyle. Great call.
All right, fellas. Gordon Hayward on ESPN2. Just looking ahead to next year. Take it easy, fellas.
As Celtics fans always do, of course. Always looking ahead. 347-215-7771.
Before we get to the next call, Joe Sway, I have a quick question.
Before we get to Mikey, sit tight. We'll get right to you. Or no, is that Mikey
this
or Miley? Miley, excuse me.
This is just a quick one I want to get your thoughts on. Through three games, Butler has just been put out of the game. It's just not like he doesn't have that typical superstar feel to him. I know he had that one quarter where he really went full blazing, hot shots, and knocked the Celtics out in that game one. But for so much of the series, it just seems like he's been able to be taken out of the game so easily. Just if he's the guy this offseason that they look at and they try to make a deal for, I don't know. How do you feel about that? Do you have the same image of Butler that you had going into this series?
Pretty much. I do, honestly. I know tonight was not as a greatest example of that, but I just feel like when Jimmy gets going, I mean, he's a guy that can just score 14, 15 points in one quarter, you know? In terms of him fitting with this Celtics team, I don't hate it, but I just feel like if you add him to this roster, I don't know if that makes them a championship team. I'm not convinced about that. I think that they could challenge the Cavs, possibly make the finals, but I still think that's a tough tough series against the Cavs, even if you have Jimmy Butler on your roster. That's just my opinion. But again, yeah, he is a nice player. I do like him a lot. I think he is probably the second best two-way player behind Kawhi Leonard. I mean, that's just my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I saw him and Paul George at about the same level at the trade deadline, and just watching the two of them in the playoffs this year is kind of changing my mind about that a little bit. I know the Pacers are losing, but George is a monster. Like, if they have the chance to get him this offseason, just with his height, his shooting ability, even his defense, and just his overall playmate, like, he boosted way ahead of Butler in my mind just watching the two of them in these first rounds, but that's just me.
No, that's my guy. Yeah, you're talking to the choir right here, man. You're preaching to the choir. That is my guy. I love me some Paul George. Get him in Celtics green. Celtics can make it to the finals.
Oh, those dunks. Those dunks he's throwing down on the Cleveland front line.
Oh, come on. I mean, this
monstrous.
This dude is itching to get deep into the playoffs. As soon as he gets that opportunity, I think Boston would be a great home for him to achieve that. But I digress. Let's not even get back into that because I don't want to start talking as if we're talking about, you know, like we're in the off season quite yet.
The Celtics are still in this one.
They're trailing the Bulls 2-1. Game four is on Sunday, but we're talking about game three. And to continue our conversation, we got Miley joining in. What's up, Miley? Is it Miley or Mikey? Did Nick do a typo? Or it is Miley. Okay, I didn't know if you did a typo or not. What's up, Miley? What's going on? Thanks for joining the show.
Not much. What about you guys?
I'm liking this game.
Hey, we're enjoying the W.
I'm enjoying it, but at the same time, I'm a little worried about those threes, man. Not to keep, you know, repeating myself, but that's my only thing about this game. I don't want to end up saying the Celtics need to, you know, score X amount of threes in order to win a game. That's my only fear.
I mean, I think like for a game four, well, as long as we keep playing like we just did today, like with the effort, I think we'll win game four. Easily.
Yeah, they got back to the hustle team tonight. They got back to the hustle. I used to call it the Celtics hustle 2 years ago. They would just outwork their opponent every night, make every extra effort to make steals, tough rebounds, all of that. And it came back tonight. I mean, the Bulls were just flat, slow, sloppy at times, and the Celtics were on their toes, ready to get loose balls. Smart had some sensational steals again tonight. That's another part of the green factor that just made that seem like such a brilliant play to get the team back into things. They were hustling tonight, and that was just so beautiful to watch. That's why you like this team. It's why you watch every night. And when they weren't doing that in the first two games, it was heartbreaking almost.
Tell me about it.
What else did you like about it, Miley, about tonight's game?
About tonight's game, well, I liked it that we rebounded better. Plus, I kind of liked it that the Bulls wasn't at the free throw line like multiple times like they were the last two games, because it seemed like they were at the free throw line at least 18 or 19 times a game or something like that.
Yeah, I thought that was very important for the Celtics to get to the free throw line. I mean, they did get there, seven times? That's just not what you want to see. One thing I was impressed with the Celtics, that they got there, I think it was 19 times in game two. They're not shooting. They're not knocking them down the way they did during the regular season. They kept bringing that up on ESPN. You know, they are 80% free throw shooting team. They've been shooting, almost 60% or low to, I think it was 64%.
Low 60s.
In the first two games, I was one silver lining I thought of game two was that they got 19 attempts at the free throw line. They only made 14 of them, but if they can, you know, stay in that area between 17, 20 free throws a game, I think they'd be in decent shape, especially a team that's a good free throw shooting team, even if they're not showing it in the series.
That's true. I think Al Horford and Isaiah, man, they were on fire.
It's funny. The first half, I was getting frustrated a bit with Al. I was like, oh, Al, take your man to the hoop. I mean, at one point, you could even hear – I think I heard Hubie just, like, let out one of those. And I swear, Hubie watches a lot of Boston Celtics games because he just knows so much about the Celtics whenever they have a Celtics telecast. And I knew he let that out because Horford had the rim right in front of him, and he gave a pass into the corner. I think it was to Avery Bradley or Jay Crowder, instead of going up for an easy layup that was right in front of him. But then in the second, third, fourth quarter, I mean, you saw him find his guys, keep that ball moving. He had four steals, a game-high steal on the defensive end, and he was sort of getting a little, you know, rah-rah at some point. You know, he got a couple of dunks going. He was staring at the crowd. He was sort of getting all pumped up. I love to see that at Al Horford. We need somebody like that. I love the attitude. You know, it can't just be Marcus Smart every single night. You know, and
that
of course, Isaiah Thomas is going through a tough time, so we're not going to see that from Isaiah. You need someone to do that, and why not the veteran, the guy who has more playoff miles than anyone on that roster, flexing his muscles. I loved it.
There was one dunk where he just flew in over Mirotić, and I don't know how he did it, but they described it as rubbing it in. Like, he just rubbed it in the rim, just got that little feel on it, and he was throwing down monstrous dunks all night long. And, oh, if you're a Horford hater, I don't know how you can watch last night and say anything about him. Even in his worst games, he's still making an impact. But at his best, he just takes over the game with his fundamentals. And even on the defensive end, where he hasn't been quite the same player this year, he was giving Lopez all kinds of issues. And Lopez, it was embarrassing in that game, too, the way Lopez, just a hustle offensive rebounder, good defender. The way he took them to school offensively in game two was one of the most embarrassing parts about that game. And Horford just got out there, banged him around, got him stuck in the corner at one point. He kind of knew that a little bit.
Yeah, so I would say if Mirotić is guarding you, I just say you take him to the rim. I know Robin Lopez is a bit of a better defender, but that's my only knock on Horford. The rest, you know, I'm okay with. I'm okay with the threes. You know, he attempted three, made two of them. I have no problem with that. Of course, the open looks. We saw Isaiah Thomas find him down low. I love that. I mean, the give and go that he had, I think it was with Marcus Smart. He had a couple of those. I mean, he's sort of a matchup nightmare when Mirotić is on him, and I feel like he can move faster. He can continue to move the offense through him. I don't have a problem with that. My only knock on him is when you have a layup in front of you, you take that layup. It's almost like he looks at all his players first before he decides to make a move. And there were some instances where it was a no-brainer because he just knew it, you know, whether it was an alley-oop or whether he just knew there was no one else around him. But if Mirotić is in front of you and you have to step over him, which of course he does, 9 times out of 10, you take that step and get in front of him and finish strong. And that's exactly what he did in some instances. But I just like to see more of that. You know, I hope he finished with 18 points. I think he could have finished with 24, 26 if he was more aggressive. Of course, a win's a win. You take what you get from out of Horford. But for him to do a little bit of everything, and if he were a little bit more aggressive on offense, I think that's a bonus. And that's something the Celtics could capitalize on.
I love to see him as the outlet for the passes, though. And it does get frustrating at times watching him not take it, not be that aggressive scorer. But at the same time, one of their biggest issues offensively, especially you keep pointing at game two because it was just rock bottom for them, but they were taking shots early in the shot clock, throwing up these crazy threes, and not even looking to move the ball. When the ball is in his hands, he's always eyeing the court. He's always looking for an outlet to get the ball moving, to kind of revamp the offense, even if they're getting it stuck in a position. And I know you want that $24 million guy to get you 24 points, 30 points. You want to have those big scoring games from them. When I look at him, if you're getting 6-7 assists from him, paired with that 14, 15 points he's usually got going, that's like that's a 25, 30 point night in total, just on an overall effect on the offense. So it doesn't bother me as much as it does for some people that he doesn't always try to take it to the rim.
Anything else, Miley, before I let you go?
So I was also going to ask, what's your guys' thoughts about game four, and who do you think will be like our biggest factor in game four to get the win?
I think, not to sound cliche, but it's going to be Isaiah Thomas. Our track record will tell you when Isaiah Thomas scores less than 20, he's going to drop about 34 the next game. So I think that's going to be the case. Going home to Seattle and seeing family, I'm sure had an effect on him. I'm sure it sort of sunk in more, the loss of his sister. You know, heading back home, of course, I'm sure it triggered a lot of memories that he had growing up with his sister. So I sort of expected him to have sort of a bit of an off night. I mean, 14 points, he was 7 of 18, a little off. I mean, it wasn't a horrible night, but of course, like we said, I mean, his teammates were there to pick him up, and I think he's going to go into Sunday's game very inspired, and I think the offense is going to, in other words, he's going to go off. Another person who's going to do the same is Jimmy Butler. I just don't think Jimmy Butler is the type of player that's going to, you know, give you back-to-back duds. And I think tonight was certainly a dud. I mean, 7 of 21, was it 14 points? I mean, he did a little bit of rebounding for the Bulls, but
like
they
that.
Need him to score. Without Rondo, without that facilitator, without that playmaker, they're going to need as much offense as they can get. And heading into this game, too, another thing to point out is that I feel like if the Chicago Bulls are going to – if they score more than 100, that puts the Celtics in a very, very tough spot. I think it's very important for the Celtics to keep them under 100. You have to keep them under 100 because I think if you go into any fourth quarter and if it's a two-point game, Wade or Butler are prone to go off. They're likely to go off, especially someone like Dwayne Wade with a lot of playoff experience. And this is something that he did last year for the Miami Heat. I mean, that was an impressive series for them to get out of the first round. You saw Dwayne Wade put together one of his better playoff performances of his career, even at his advanced age. This is a situation where he's not the number one option. He can flourish in this situation. He's not someone that they need to score, you know, 40 points or someone that they need him to constantly score throughout the game. It's almost like he's prone to save all that offensive production when they need it most in the fourth quarter. So when the Celtics are in a tight game with the Bulls in the fourth, and if the Bulls are really feeling themselves offensively, which of course is the case, if they're at 100 or close to 100 points, I think it's safe to say that they're going to be having a good shooting night, which could be the case on Sunday with Jimmy Butler, because I think Jimmy Butler will go off and will have a great night. So it's going to be very important for the Celtics to, of course, again, give Isaiah that support. And those two guys that you can count on, I think, to do that is Avery Bradley and Jay Crowder. Bradley has shown he's out of his little shooting slump. Jay Crowder has been shooting well, I think, throughout the series. I think it's gone unnoticed how well Jay Crowder has done on both ends of the floor. So I think those three guys, if they're playing well and if they have a great shooting night, I mean, I just see the Celtics beating the Bulls just with that factor, with that equation, because Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade, after those guys, where is his offense coming from for the Bulls? You know, it's like you said, Bobby, who's going to be that guy to provide scoring when you don't have a facilitator like Rondo calling the shots?
Well, I'm still a little fearful of Wade. I thought tonight there were moments in the
That's
game where
saying.
He
That's
really he looked like the old Wade. And Wade has experience being in that position, bringing the ball up the floor, initiating the offense. I know Calvin downplayed it a little bit, but I'm not downplaying that at all. I think he's going to be able to take that ball and be their playmaker for the rest of this series. And if they're smart, they'll let him do that. He's a veteran. He may not have quite the playmaking experience as Rondo does, even offensively. But there was one play in this game, and I think you'll remember it when I bring it up, where he just read the screen perfectly on an inbounds play. Beat the screener right to the ball, found Avery Bradley in the corner. They were trying to get guys stuck on a screen and get Bradley an open three in the corner, and he just made a split-second decision to get there right on time and block the shot by a fingertip. Wade is a brilliant player. He's an experienced – he's one of the best players we've ever seen, and he has years and years of experience making plays on both ends of the floor. He was even blocking shots around the rim tonight. So, you know, as much as it sounds crazy, their worst team without Rondo, he was really the driving force behind their effort, especially defensively. But if they empower Dwayne Wade to be their playmaker on both ends of the court, it's going to be a similar effect. And that's why I think this series is far from over. But offensively, it won't be quite as staggering as Rondo's playmaking was. I'm still awestruck at how important Rondo ended up becoming in this series. He was dynamite in those first, in the game two especially.
Yeah, I think Dwayne Wade, I got to agree with you, man. Dwayne Wade has to be that playmaker. I mean, who's going to be in the backcourt? It's probably going to be Grant again, but he's going to be the main, he's going to be the point guard. You know, one person I'm surprised Hoiberg hasn't gone to. I wouldn't be surprised if we see him in game four. That's Anthony Morrow. I mean, Anthony Morrow has proven that he can give you valuable minutes. I mean, we saw what he did in Oklahoma City, and that's an option I think he's going to seek in game four. He's going to try to get him in there and just get some sort of offense out of the bench, because aside from Zipser, or if Portis is off, like he has been ever since that 19 points in game one, I think Anthony Morrow can easily provide you 10, 11, or 12 points coming off the bench.
They're going to make an adjustment. They are. Hoiberg's better than people give him credit for. Tonight was just such an awful game for them that you almost know there's going to be a change of some sort. And the Celtics have to be ready to counter that in some way. But for now, I think the formula for the Celtics to win that game four is keep those athletic wings out there, whether it's Rozier, whether it's Gerald Green. Those guys help a lot on getting the offense running, getting completing stops, which is what I talk about a lot. You can get a brilliant stop, but if you give up an easy tip-in, a second-chance possession, it's just demoralizing for your effort. And that's why I think they really fell out of game two and pretty much just gave up to end that game. The amount of second-chance points you give up can really wear down on a defense very quickly.
Yeah, I agree, Bobby. The next chess move is certainly going to be done by the Chicago Bulls, and we'll see what Hoiberg does in game four. Miley, I appreciate you calling in. Always feel free to call
again,
all right?
Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely.
Thanks,
Miley.
And Celtics in six.
Celtics in six, huh? Oh, okay. That was my original prediction. I don't know if I can stick with that now. What about you?
We'll see. We'll see. I mean,
yeah, you're a little hesitant now. You can't say Celtics in six now.
I'm hesitant because I think there's going to be a counter move. I think there is, and they're going to get knocked off their feet again trying to run with what they are now. And there's something to the fact that they get a little bit predictable at times. Like, they get in an offense that works, and they keep running it over and over and over again. And you look at what they did tonight, you're a lot more concerned about the three-point shots not falling than I am, because I just think they're a good three-point shooting team. But it won't be as staggering as tonight. They've hit one of those strides where they just had guys top to bottom on the roster drilling threes. I mean, I think Terry Rozier himself had I don't know, Terry Rozier did not have a three. It must have been a deep two. But they shot lights out. I'm looking at the wrong column. 3 for 5, Terry Rozier from three tonight.
I was going to say, he had a few. I mean, that's where most of his points came from, those catch-and-shoot opportunities that I like him in now.
Yeah, I mean, there's some guys on this roster who you would expect to repeat their performance more than others, but they can't get too predictable. I mean, tonight's formula worked tonight, but if Chicago comes back with something different, they have to be able to be the team that's ahead of the curve with the adjustments, and that's where you look to Stevens and say, if you're going to be the strength of this team, you got to be proactive in those decisions. And you can almost go back to game one and look at all the issues they had in game one. I know the Gerald Green move is a little bit radical. Even he said it back then. But if you're thinking about that and you know it's going to get the team playing the way they need to, you got to be proactive in that and see what's going on and make the read and push for the changes early, because going down 0-2 in a series is a huge hole. I mean, if they drop game three, 3-0's impossible to come back from. But even 3-1's pretty hard. I mean, you got to win 3 straight must-win games with your back against the wall at that point. So they can't let themselves fall in the holes, and that goes back to the first quarters. They were brilliant in the first quarter tonight. They set the pace of the game. They played the game the way they wanted to, and that set the tone for the rest of the night. And Chicago did similar things in those first quarters in the first two games. So it's a battle of two conflicting styles, and it's going to be a push and tug the rest of the way, and they just have to make sure that their style is the one that's being played throughout the course of the game, because if that's what's going to be played in any single game, there's no way Chicago can keep up with it. They're burnt out by the fourth quarter trying to play this style of basketball.
Well, one thing I loved to see Stevens do, and this is something I talked about going into the postseason, was that he's giving his starters more minutes than he usually does. I think all of these guys, in order for the Celtics to be successful, they have to play over 30 minutes. Now, this is before Amir Johnson, of course, was taken out of the starting lineup, but heading into the postseason, I kept urging for Brad Stevens to play at least two of those four starters at all times. He's somewhat doing that a bit now, and I love it, because now you're putting your team in a situation where your top guys are going to affect the game when Isaiah Thomas is on the bench. When Isaiah Thomas is on the bench, I want to see Al Horford and Avery Bradley. When Avery Bradley is on the bench, I want to see Jay Crowder and Isaiah Thomas. You know, I need to see two out of those four guys on the floor at all times, and it seems like he's now doing that just when he's supposed to in the postseason. All four of those guys have played over 30 minutes, and I love that. They all played 30 minutes, especially tonight. Bradley, 36. Horford, 33. Crowder, 33. Thomas, 31. And this is a game that, of course, those last 4 or 5 minutes was pretty much garbage time, but I listen to guys off the bench who are going to get those solid minutes. Tonight, it was Rozier and Smart. Olynyk had 14 minutes, but both of those guys, Rozier and Smart, that strong backcourt, they both clocked in over 20 minutes. Rozier had 23 and Smart had 29. We know how Smart usually plays at the end of the fourth quarter, so he's going to inch towards 30 minutes every single night. And that's your personnel. Those are your guys. Those guys need to be ready to have those playing those minutes night in and night out in the playoffs. And I love the fact that you didn't see Olynyk play, 14, and then Brown play 11, and then Jarepko play 10. No, you stick with those guys. You have your go-to guys off the bench. And if someone gets into foul trouble, then you'll see what now is, I guess, Jaylen Brown. He's sort of like that third string guy. And then, of course, that fourth guy, the ninth guy tonight, was Jarepko. He played 10 minutes, and he gave you a great 10 minutes. 10 minutes, 6 points, 3 rebounds. You utilize all 10 of those minutes, and you pick that ninth man to come in and do the dirty work for you. And that's exactly what you saw. And that's what I hope I'm going to continue to see. I don't like to see him typically go 10 deep in a fashion where everyone on the bench or mostly all those bench guys are clocking in over 12, 14 minutes. I love to see the rotation shorten, and I love to see starters play playoff minutes. This is the playoffs. You don't have to save these guys. No one here is an aging veteran. This isn't, we're not talking about guys like Garnett and Paul Pierce that you have to like monitor their minutes, specifically Garnett in those days where it was 5 minutes on and 5 minutes off. No, you don't have guys like that. And this is the playoffs. And this is when the Celtics are going to need to prove to the entire NBA that they can finally get out of the first round.
Yeah, and they ran into that situation in the fourth quarter. They were getting immense production from that lineup I talked about earlier. Jarepko, Olynyk, Rozier, Bradley, and Marcus Smart leading the way, the great Marcus Smart. But they ran into the point at which they got to 5 minutes with that lineup in the fourth quarter, and it started to get a little bit shaky. The Bulls turned a quick 4-0 swing, and he kept rolling with those guys. And it was a risk. It paid off. And they ultimately got Chicago to step down and pretty much toss the towel away on this game. I didn't think Chicago's effort to fight back in that fourth quarter was there at all, especially once that bench hit him in the face. That was like the final knockout blow. But I was a little nervous in that situation. I think the surefire move in that spot is to just go back to your starters. I know you want to get them a little bit of rest in the fourth quarter there, especially when you have like an 18-point lead. But something goes wrong and you completely lose control of the game at that spot, and then it gets down to a single digit. I know it was the worst case scenario there, but if you're in a position like that where you're about to go down 3-0 in the series, if you improbably blow this, just be better safe than sorry and just go with the starters in that spot. So I completely agree with you there. When it comes to the bench, I'm not as concerned about tighten it up anymore. I think it's almost overrated with this team, especially because there's so many different guys off the bench who can give you different kinds of things throughout periods of the game. And they found the right pairing with those guards in that lineup in the fourth between Rozier and Bradley, because they were both knocking down shots with Marcus Smart trying to find some space for them. And they're both athletic guards who can get to the rim and rebound. So that gave Jarepko and Olynyk a little bit of room for error. That's a lineup to watch for, because I think there's a lot of strengths inside and out to that lineup, especially if you're trying to get four of your starters some rest. Bradley's a guy who I think can log some extra minutes. 36 leading the whole game, and a big portion of those were with that bench lineup that dominated in the fourth. So I'll agree with you. You definitely need one of those starters out there with that bench unit. But they found tonight that there's a lot more hidden gold on the roster than you would have thought. And going down deep into that bench helped them immensely tonight. Gerald Green and Terry Rozier were two guys you probably wouldn't even imagine playing coming into the series. But now I think they're going to be vital parts of the rotation just because of the matchups. They make a lot of sense the way they play against the Chicago team. And Stevens talked about it all the time. He takes every single game for what it is from a matchup perspective and adjust the team style to play with that team and get the most out of his team on that given night. Like, he's not necessarily trying to play to the other team's strengths, but he's trying to set up his team to play their best against what the other team's throwing at them. And tonight he did that perfectly. And the traditional people say, all right, you're depending on Rozier, you're depending on Green. That's kind of a flawed concept, but if you have that many different diverse skill sets on the roster where you can throw out lineups like that and get strong 5 minutes out of the bench. We talked so much this year about how bad the bench has been. And tonight they found just the right pairings on that lineup that was able to go on a big run. They were +5 against Chicago's strong lineup early in that fourth quarter. And I'm going to point to that over and over again tonight as being the key to this game. The fact that they were able to get that kind of production out of those guys and not depend on the starters as much to get everything out of them. Because you know it too, Josue. I know you want to depend on the starters, but when they go to the bench, and you have to go to the bench sometimes, even in the playoffs, no one's going to be playing 48 minutes. When the bench would just give up what the starters established, it's so deflating. Especially
right,
when Isaiah's off the floor.
Which typically happens when you have like four bench guys and one starter. Who are from the starting lineup, along with those bench guys, they're much stronger. And I'm not saying like, oh, I don't want to see 9 or 10 guys playing. What I'm saying is like, I want the bulk of the game's minutes to go to the starters. I don't want to see what Isaiah Thomas called early in the season when they lost that game against the Warriors, quote unquote, experimenting. You know, I don't want to see, you know, more than, you know, five guys off the bench averaging, or not averaging, but clocking in double digits in minutes. I want to see the starters, all of them, playing over 30 minutes, all four of them. You know, that fifth guy, whether it's Gerald Green again, of course, won't do that. You know, he'll probably get it around 20, 25. If that's the case, all right, so be it. But those four main guys, your four best players on the team, Avery Bradley, Isaiah Thomas, Al Horford, Jay Crowder, these guys need to clock in over 30. Isaiah Thomas needs to clock in close to 40. He didn't do that tonight, obviously, because the game was out of reach for the Bulls by the time, the fourth or fifth minute mark of the fourth quarter. So that wasn't the case, but typically, in a close game, I think Isaiah Thomas should be playing close to 40 minutes. I mean, heading into the postseason, he was 40th, I believe, or 39th, top 40 in minutes per game, which is fine. All right, I don't have any problem with that. I mean, the Celtics are the number one seed. What more do you want? But I think going into the postseason, you need to bump that up a bit. Everyone else needs to bump up their minutes. I mean, we've seen this in the past with teams, playoff teams that don't have, or I should say, have a thin bench. A lot of those starters pick up the load. And, of course, you need bench guys. Marcus Smart's always going to be in the fold. Kelly Olynyk, regardless of how he plays, he's always in the fold just because of what he brings you. You know, whether he's on or off, he's going to give you something, you know, on the defensive end or on the offensive end. Maybe sometimes he doesn't even give you much, but he's still going to get playing time because he's that big man by default off the bench that's going to play more minutes than, you know, Tyler Zeller or Amir Johnson now, you know. So I feel like Marcus Smart, Kelly Olynyk are solidified. Terry Rozier, after what he did tonight, is probably going to be one of those guys too. And if that's the case, I don't mind that. My whole problem with the Celtics sometimes, I feel like Brad Stevens, you know, tends to, in the past, rest his guys more than he needs to. And then by the time he puts them back in, the game's out of reach. You know, we've seen that happen throughout the regular season. It's a pattern that I don't want to see in the playoffs.
Yeah, in the fourth quarter, I'll say it again, it got a little bit shaky with that lineup, and they held on.
Right.
But I got that feeling, just like you do, that, oh, no, here we go. It's about to break loose. And you fear that he's going to make that timeout just a little too late where it gets down to, like, the 10-point range. And even though you get your starters back in at that point, the door is wide open for the other team to make the push even against the starters when they get back in there. So I see what you're saying. But great, great lineup tonight in that fourth quarter. It was beautiful the way they were passing up. There was one possession where I feel like all five guys touched the ball before Jarepko hit a rolling layup to the rim. That was just some beautiful basketball from those five. And to see it without Isaiah, which what Brian Robb tweet out just a minute ago, the Celtics with Isaiah on the court had 90 offensive rating. When he was off the court, 152. That was how good the bench unit played tonight. So just out of nowhere, they put in the show.
Boston Celtics knock off the Bulls 104-87. They take game three. They now pull to a 2-1 series now. They will look to tie the series up on Sunday. Bobby, any final thoughts before we get out of here? I'm going to wrap up the show. What's your take on game four? More of the same? It's just some curveball you expect the Bulls to throw at the Celtics, you know, now that it's sort of sunk in that what they look like when Rondo's not out there. Do you see Brad Stevens shaking things up rotation-wise or doing something a little bit different? What's your take heading into game four?
Well, move back in the way a ton of involved. And what you hope, they loosen up on Thomas a little bit, kind of back their heels and play more harder.
Bob, you're breaking up, man. All right, Nick, you want to jump in here? Oh, man, it looks like I lost two of my guys here. Hello? Okay. All right. We'll see if we can get Bobby back on here. Nick, I'm going to step aside for a little bit. But what I got from Bobby was that he hopes that they back away from Thomas a bit and try to defend the perimeter. I don't see that happening. I think Fred Hoiberg is sort of thinking the way I'm thinking going into game four, which is the Celtics can't sustain this throughout an entire series. So I can see him sort of letting the Celtics shooters, or not letting them, but he's going to still keep a close eye on Isaiah Thomas, because like I believe Thomas, he probably thinks the same, that Thomas is going to go off in game four because he's due and he's going to bounce back from this game, whether Jay Crowder and Avery Bradley are making the shots or not. So I think when you look at the stat sheet, you see the Celtics scored 17 out of 37 from behind the arc. I just think Hoiberg may put a little bit more pressure on that, but I think he has bigger concerns on his offense. And I wouldn't be surprised if you see someone like Anthony Morrow get some playing time. He's going to have to find offense from somebody. You'll see guys getting set up more. I think Robin Lopez, that mid-range jump shot, that's something that he could utilize again. I mean, he was 5-7 tonight. He finished with 12 points. But, you know, in game two, he torched the Celtics from out there. You know, he finished with 18 points in game two. So that's something that I think that he could certainly utilize again in game four. Maybe give him a few more touches now that Rondo is out of the mix. And he's going to have to try to find offense through those guys. And hopefully, or for his sake, hopefully they'll see Portis come back in here and put together the kind of performance he did in game one where he scored 19 points. So that's something I think the Chicago Bulls are going to do. The Celtics, I think, are going to see some, pretty much the same that you saw tonight, minus the fact that defensively, I think they're going to sort of buckle down a bit more because, again, I think Jimmy Butler is going to find his rhythm. He's going to go off a bit, so that's going to be a cause for concern for the Celtics. But you're going to pretty much see a little bit more of the same, and hopefully it'll be enough to knock off the Bulls and tie this series up as they head back to Boston and see if they can even potentially, depending on what happens in game four, potentially grab a 3-2 lead in game five. Can you imagine if that happens? I don't know. It could happen, could not. We'll see what happens. This is going to be a wrap for the Celtics post-game show on CLNS Radio, the leading online provider of audio and video coverage for the Boston Celtics. Quick reminder, make sure you follow Jared Weiss, my boy, on Twitter if you haven't already. Give him a follow. He is in Chicago giving you nothing but updates. He will be there for the weekend, so certainly follow him on Twitter if you haven't already. And we will see what happens in game four. Look for a lot of changes. Look for this this chess move out of the Bulls. We'll see what they do differently in game four.
Back just in time here. Here I am again.
What's up, Bobby? Finish your take before we get up out of here, man. You really threw me off there. I'm like, all right.
Yeah.
I'll give my take real quick, and then I'm going to wrap this up without him. So what's up, Bobby? What are you saying?
Comes right back around. I don't know what you heard. Probably nothing with this dorm room connection up here. But
hopefully they back off of Thomas a bit. That's all I got.
Yeah. If they're backing off Thomas a little bit, expecting him to make those plays, because like I said, they were just bamboozled tonight by how many plays he was able to make, and I think that throws a lot of fans off too. How good of a distributor he is when he puts his mind to it. But if they just back off him a little bit, I think they're going to have that room where you could see one of those 30-point games from him, 30-plus. And this is still his team. I know people get mad when he's out there making shots and it looks like everyone else is just out there standing around a little bit. But at the same time, you love to have that guy who could give you 30, 35 points and just take over a playoff game. So I would love to see that in game four. And that would kind of counteract that fear you have a little bit of, you know, everyone else might not be making those three-pointers next game. So who do you depend on? You depend on your best scorer in that situation. And he can handle the load, but like you said as well, the Bulls protect that rim well, and that's something that's not going to change either. And Thomas really gets going when he's getting to the rim there rather than sitting out on the perimeter. So I'm going to have my eyes on Thomas for that game four. He was brilliant tonight. Maybe the most important player overall, the way he started making those plays. But it feels good to get that win out of the way. It feels like we have a series again.
And I'm sure it feels good for the Celtics, man. That was a big win. Of course, they must win game three as they took in Chicago 104-87. What's up?
Did you see Rondo? Did you see that video? I don't know if you saw it going across Twitter of Rondo trying to, quote-unquote, trip by a crowd on the sideline there.
No, I didn't see that. I gotta look that up on Twitter.
You got tricked out. Crowder was standing in the corner, and Rondo just, you know, kicked his full foot up almost onto the court there with Crowder running by, and everyone was asking him after the game, and all he said was, when you tear your ACL, sometimes it gets a little stiff. You just got to stick it out there. So I don't know. You can judge for yourself, I guess.
That's funny. That's funny from Crowder. All right, well, that's going to do it for the Celtics postgame show, CLNS Radio. The postgame show, of course, will be available on demand. Make sure you search the CLNS Radio Boston Celtics postgame show on iTunes, Stitcher, as well as the CLNS Radio mobile app. If you haven't downloaded that, do yourself a favor. You can check out the Cause of the Street podcast. Of course, you can check out Bobby Manning's podcast, all on the CLNS
podcast.
Radio mobile podcast, and a bunch of other content that you don't want to miss out for all you Boston sports lovers out there. It's not just Celtics. Trust me, you want to download the CLNS Radio mobile app. Make sure you follow CLNS on social media. At CLNS on Twitter, and like us at facebook.com/CLNSfans. Today's show is brought to you by SeatGeek. Start using SeatGeek for free by downloading the app, and make sure you enter that promo code where you can save up to you can get yourself a $20 rebate by downloading the SeatGeek app and entering the code CLNS, all one word. Also, Blue Apron, head over to www.blueapron.com/CLNS for three free meals and free shipping. Head to blueapron.com/CLNS. Also, our friends at MBMT Watches, head over to mbmtwatches.com/CelticsBeat for 15% off your first purchase with free shipping. And of course, head over to audiblepodcast.com/tribe now for a free 30-day trial of audio books. Music was provided by Nick DeCento, Joshua Morris. Want to thank all of our callers tonight. A lot of callers tonight. We appreciate it. Of course, it's playoff basketball, so everyone wants to talk Celtics, especially after this big win. It's the Celtics knock off the Bulls 104-87. For CLNS Radio executive producer Larry H. Russell, program director Justin Poulin, and, of course, the founder, Nick Gelso, our producer tonight, Mr. Nick Gelso, and my co-host, Bobby Manning. Bobby, this was fun. We've done this a bunch, and I hope we do it again soon, Bobby. We'll see if this other team can extend their season, and we'll probably see each other again soon. I am Joseph Pavone. What's up?
Another round, another show.
Oh, another round already? I don't know, man. Pump the brakes. We'll see. We'll see. One game at a time, Bobby. But we'll see what happens. I am Joseph Pavone. We'll see everyone back here Sunday night as the Celtics will take on the Bulls for game 4 of this quarterfinals best of 7 series. Have a good night, everyone. See you then.